weekend all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the December 17th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. The International Cricket Council has given Nigeria the hosting rights for the Africa qualifiers for the 2022 ICC Men's T20 World Cup in Australia. For reaction, Iron Mike Mbonye spoke with the public relations officer of the Nigeria Cricket Federation, Musa Ehizoje.
The hosting rights came as a result of course, Nigeria bidding for it. And with the new facilities and the strides we're making in cricket, the ICC saw it fit that Nigeria at this point has come of age to organize more tournaments in regards to world cricket. In 2018, we hosted the Africa Division 1 qualifier in Lagos, and this is the second time we'll be hosting an ICC event, and it has become very evident of the efforts Nigeria is putting to make and to become more popular in the international stage. The board structure has been on point, facility development has also been on point, and of course the standard of play in the country, and of course the grassroots development, have all been greatly recognized by ICC. And it is only right that Nigeria at this point will host the qualifiers for the ICC Men's T20 World Cup in 2022, taking place in Australia. And this comes at the back of the facilities we're building, which is of world standard. We're building tough wickets in Nigeria. We already have 2 in Nigeria, and we're building 3 extra, which gives us the capacity to host this magnitude of tournament.
Cricket is not a very popular game in Nigeria. What is the Federation doing to make it popular and also to qualify for the 2022 World Cup?
When you talk about the popularity of cricket in Nigeria, when you put it side by side with football and basketball and maybe any other sport, we can say, yes, the popularity is not there. But when it comes to the last 3 years of a sport that has made the greatest impact, especially with the Federal Ministry of Youth and Sport Development, cricket comes on top of the burner for all the right reasons. For example, Under 19 qualified for the World Cup for the first time in over 100 years of the existence of the sports in Nigeria, and that went viral, and of course it gave the international community and even the ministry gave a very good nod about that. And in terms of making it more popular to become maybe like football or athletics, the Nigeria Cricket Federation had engaged in several development and technical structures. They put those structures in place. For example, we have the Nigeria Kids Cricket, which looks to bring 50,000 new kids into the game every year. And the Federation has also taken it one step further to introduce what we call the Accelerated Growth Program, which looks to bring 200,000 new kids into the game every year across the country. We have also partnered with the media in such a way that for every single information about cricket or activity, it is put out there in the media for people to know that something big is really happening. We've also engaged in capacity building for our coaches, our umpires, and even in administration, we also have courses that our administrators are taking to make sure we run a system of international standard in regards to making this game very popular in Nigeria. So in the last 3 years, I would say cricket has been the sport with the most improvement in terms of popularity in Nigeria, and it can only get better going into 2021 and the year beyond.
The Cricket Federation of Nigeria has employed a new coach. Tell us about him and his qualities.
Yes, the Nigeria Cricket Federation recently hired the services of Asanka Gurusinha as the new head coach and the high performance manager, because the Federation felt it is time for Nigeria to take the game to the next level, to become one of the favorites at international level, not just having a passing interest when it comes to world cricket, but actually participating and competing in more tournaments and win more matches, and of course get our ranking ranked high up there with the International Cricket Council. Asanka fits the bill because he's played at the highest level. As a matter of fact, in 1996, he won the ICC Cricket World Cup, Men's World Cup with Sri Lanka. And in the final game against Australia, he was very pivotal in winning that match. And also, he has coached at the highest level. As recently as 2017, he was involved with the Sri Lankan national team as head selector and coach, and is also a regional development coach with Cricket Australia. When you talk about Australia and Sri Lanka in cricket, you're talking of the likes of Brazil, Spain, or Germany in football. And Asanka understands what Nigeria is trying to do, because during his playing days coming up, he played under the similar conditions which we have in Nigeria as a developing country in cricket. And he understands that talent is not the problem in Nigeria. You just need to fine-tune what we have. And of course, with the new modern technologies in cricket, which he also possesses, he fits the bill for Nigeria. So it's a win-win situation both ways.
That's Musa Ehizoje, the public relations officer of the Nigeria Cricket Federation. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Abuja, Nigeria.
Spotty, greetings. This is Sunday Dare, Minister of Youth and Sports Development, Nigeria. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Turning to tennis, Dominic Thiem of Austria and Naomi Osaka of Japan celebrated titles this year at the U.S. Open in New York. In this Sunny Side of Sports highlight for 2020, VOA's Jim Stevenson looks back on their victories, and Jim begins with Thiem.
I achieved a life goal and a dream of myself, which I had for many, many years.
Dominic Thiem of Austria came from behind at the U.S. Open in New York to beat German Alexander Zverev 2-6, 4-6, 6-4, 6-3, 7-6 in a nerve-rattling battle for both in search of their first Grand Slam title.
For him, it was his first major finals, and for him was the same like for me. We both didn't face one of the big three, so I guess that was in the back of the head for both of us, and that's why we were on nerves, because this was a very good chance for the both of us.
Without Novak Djokovic, Rafael Nadal, or Roger Federer in the way, the 27-year-old world number three Thiem appeared to have blown his chance as he fell two sets behind Zverev. But the title ultimately came to the very end.
In a fifth set tiebreak, anybody can win, so I think it's very understandable that we both didn't play our highest pace anymore.
While he felt the level of play had deteriorated, both were equally tired but tough to keep bodies and minds going.
When he served for the match, I was struggling physically, but I also thought that he is not the freshest anymore, so I was just hoping to maybe get another chance, that he's not serving that huge anymore like he did in the beginning of the match, and I played a great game there and brought myself back into the match.
For Zverev, missed opportunities.
I was super close to being Grand Slam champion. You know, I was a few games away, maybe a few points away, but for me, what upset me the most, I think, is not the third set or something like that, it's the fifth set. I had a lot of chances in the fifth set. Didn't use them.
And that left Thiem as the first player to win a Grand Slam from having trailed by two sets since Gaston Gaudio at the 2004 French Open. Coronavirus aside, both met at center court after the match.
We are really good friends. We have a long-term friendship, long-term rivalry, and I think that we were both tested negative maybe 14 times, something like that. This week, and we just wanted to share this moment, and I guess that we didn't put anybody in danger, so I think it was fine.
Zverev, of course, was dejected.
Losing 7-6 in the fifth after being two sets love and a breakup is not easy. at the speech, I mean, I got emotional. I couldn't put two words together. I don't actually remember what I said. So, yeah, it was a difficult moment for me.
Thiem, who had lost all three of his previous Grand Slam final appearances, is the second Austrian to win a Grand Slam after Thomas Muster's 1995 French Open title. Thiem thanked, well, his team.
I mean, it's by far not only myself. It's an accomplishment from all my team, from all my family, and I guess also that today is the day where I gave back a huge amount of what they did for me.
Zverev, playing in his first Grand Slam final, says he will win one day.
I'm 23 years old. I don't think it's my last chance, and I do believe that I will be a Grand Slam champion at some point.
Thiem is the first player born in the 1990s to claim a men's Grand Slam, and the first outside of the big three, Nadal, Djokovic, and Federer, to claim one since Stan Wawrinka's 2016 U.S. Open triumph. Thiem's title dream began early.
Of course, as a kid as well, when I started to play tennis, but back then it's so far away, and then I got closer and closer to the top, and at one point I realized that, wow, maybe one day I can really win one of the four biggest titles in tennis, and I put a lot of work in. I mean, I dedicated basically my whole life until this point to win one of the four majors, and now I did it.
Stand up!
Sports fans have a lot to hear each day on VOA. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports for the latest from Africa, the United States, and around the world.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro.
Find the Sunny Side of Sports on the radio, online, and as a podcast.
This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
I get it.
I feel like this year was very strange, so honestly, to have one good thing happen for me is really satisfying.
It's quite a good thing for Naomi Osaka of Japan, who won the U.S. Open women's singles title. She found her latest win a little incomprehensible.
For me, it's a bit weird because I feel like it's happened recently, but at the same time, it feels like, you know, it happened a long time ago. Australian Open.
That title in 2019 and her 2018 U.S. Open win makes Osaka the first Asian player to claim three Grand Slam tennis titles. Osaka topped Victoria Azarenka of Belarus 1-6, 6-3, 6-3.
Yeah, I mean, I would say there are definitely moments or points, per se, during the match where, you know, you feel the pressure, but then you just have to think to yourself, probably the other person feels the same way, and you know, this is a fun thing about sports is that it's a competition.
Osaka says she's learned much since her first U.S. Open win.
When I first did it, I wasn't, you know, prepared for everything, and I wasn't aware of how much work is going to be put in next time. So I would definitely say I'm more humbled now, and I'm more grateful.
And grateful for the attention received for the face masks she's been wearing after each win, with each mask bearing the name of a victim of social injustice.
It's a bit weird because I never really thought people would care about my voice or the things that I'm doing, but I feel like there's a purpose, and I just want, you know, more people to hear what I... Well, I'm not really talking, but, hear what I have to say, but I'm not really talking.
Naomi Osaka's big win has sparked big reactions from fans in Tokyo, eager to praise her stand against social injustice. 67-year-old Kazuyoshi Hosoya, who works at a university in Tokyo, was searching for a newspaper about Osaka's victory. I jumped for joy at her win. I know she's rallying for racial justice, and I've heard on TV that she was doing her best to use all seven face masks in reaching the final. I think this is amazing that she actually accomplished this, using all seven masks. Masataro Tanimoto is a 26-year-old office worker in Tokyo. Including myself, I think there are many people who are not interested in a topic like racism. But Osaka has created an opportunity to open the topic. Although people may agree or disagree, I think it is a good thing that the issue becomes a topic of discussion. Osaka's strident views on social media have made her an icon for many young Japanese, like 24-year-old Wakako Tanaka. I feel happy that a famous person like Osaka engages in such activities to protest against racism. And I hope Japanese celebrities or athletes also follow suit. Osaka, who has a Japanese mother and Haitian father, has become the face of a changing Japan coming to terms with challenges to its self-image as a racially homogenous society.
Thanks, Jim. That's my VOA colleague, Jim Stevenson. Another Sunny Side of Sports tennis highlight took place on February 7th when star players Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal faced each other in a special Match for Africa charity event in Cape Town, South Africa. And VOA's Gwen Uten filed a post-match report. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. For nearly two decades, in tournament after tournament, tennis fans have crossed their fingers in the hope of witnessing a meetup between on-court rivals Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal. And when it was announced that last February's Match for Africa would feature the two tennis greats in competition, ticket requests reached upwards of 200,000. Match for Africa 6 was held in Cape Town Stadium, and with 51,000 spectators, the event set a new record for the highest ever attendance at a tennis match. Federer spoke at a news conference ahead of the event and said that feat could only be achieved alongside Rafael Nadal.
For me, it was only by Rafa who could make this event truly special for the people here, because I have the connection to Rafa. If maybe somebody can bring him down to South Africa, it's me. And I asked him, and he said yes right away, and we've been fighting over a date for the last 2 years. So I finally got one out of him.
Federer and Nadal faced each other in the inaugural Match for Africa back in 2010. And ahead of this year's exhibition match, Federer spoke about his admiration for his opponent and his growth as a player.
You know, I remember Rafa when he was younger and he was so shy, and he was looking up to me, and he said, whatever Roger wants, I'm happy with that. And then he grew in a much stronger character, you know, and we had still a good time, but obviously the rivalry grew as we were 1-2 and 2-1 the whole time. And then today, I think with all the time that has passed, we see that we're on the final stretch in some ways, and we see life also very differently. But I think we have an ultimate respect for one another, like for anybody who has achieved as much as he has. And regardless of all the records that he's about to break of mine or vice versa, I think we're happy for one another. And so for me, I'm very happy and very excited that he's here in Cape Town coming and playing, you know, again in a completely different place and different surroundings that we've ever even been in. So it's going to be wonderful.
Rafa Nadal also spoke about his special relationship with Federer ahead of the match, saying, quote, Roger and I have shared so many magical moments on and off the court. Traveling with him to Cape Town and playing for the benefit of children is something I'm very excited about. It will be my first time in the region with Roger as a tour guide. That will be fun. And Federer might well be a suitable tour guide. Although this year's match was the first Match for Africa to actually be played on African soil, it took place in the country Federer's mother is from, which he says makes the event even more special. In each of his five previous Match for Africa events, Federer raised in excess of $1 million. But with Nadal on board, plus a celebrity doubles match featuring Microsoft founder Bill Gates and South African comedian Trevor Noah, Federer anticipated that amount would likely be surpassed.
We hope to raise, at least $1 million. I think it's going to be more than that. Obviously coming from ticket sales, from sponsors, but then also we have a foundation dinner the night before where Bill Gates is also taking part. And, you know, we're getting together and having a nice chat also with Rafa and Bill. We're all going to get together. So you add all these things together, and I think we're going to raised substantial money.
And Federer was right. In fact, the Match for Africa event raised $3.5 million. All proceeds will go to the Roger Federer Foundation in support of children's education in Africa. Federer says he prefers to stay behind the scenes of his organization and let the work speak for itself.
I've been rather shy, to be honest, to make these matches for Africa, because I always felt a little bit uncomfortable shouting about charitable work. I just feel like it's something I do with passion, but it does shine a light on philanthropy, on what I do, and it connects all the dots for me with playing tennis, raising money, and also showing the people what I do, and you can inspire others. Others inspire me.
To date, the Roger Federer Foundation has raised over $52 million to fund education, transport, and food for children in Africa. Most recently, the foundation donated $1 million to provide food for young children and families in Africa who have been affected by the coronavirus pandemic. As for the match in Africa, Federer defeated Rafa Nadal this year to continue his six-game winning streak at the event. And with pre-tax earnings of over $106 million, it was announced that the American business magazine Forbes has named Roger Federer as the world's highest paid athlete of 2020. It's the first time in Forbes' 30-year history a tennis player has held the number one spot. Federer has surpassed last year's top two leaders, Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi. The soccer stars now sit at number two and three, followed by footballer Neymar at number four. NBA great LeBron James rounds out the list at number five. And that is all from me for now. More sporty news to come. Sonny, I'll hand it back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Keeping with our tennis theme on this Thursday, Yao Afusu-Larbi in Accra recently caught up with a Ghanaian woman who is trying to raise the sports profile in her country. Sporty greetings, Yao.
Sporty greetings, Sunny. Chika fell in love with the sports as a child. Her father had introduced her to it at a very young age, and in next to no time, she had gained maximum interest. She recounts her time as a child watching stars in the Ghanaian version of the Davis Cup, like Henry Ejidakun and Gunther Dake. She started playing tennis at 10 years old, and the interest has never left. These days, her interest has narrowed and taken on a different path. Now she is mainly into the arts and coaching children on how to play the sports.
One way of introducing kids to tennis is we try and use lots of fun activities and fun games. So the first three sessions they have, we limit the actual tennis play and focus on lots of fun activities. So then they start getting the interest. Now, once they have the interest, then we start introducing the very hardcore tennis techniques to them. So far, it's worked perfectly. I have kids who've come in and initially didn't want to play tennis, but because they saw their friends playing around and running around and playing with cones and all, they got interested.
The young tennis trainer has had a fine trajectory in her line of duty. She is fairly young in the coaching game and has already met tennis stars Karin Khachanov and Andrei Rublev, who is currently ranked 8th in world tennis. Developing tennis talents in a country that doesn't quite appreciate the sport is a hard venture. Chika agrees, but says with some support, she has had some cushion.
A lot of people cannot afford the actual price that we're supposed to put out there. So usually we tend to lower the cost a bit and the prices a bit, we just adjust it to where we are in terms of whichever location you are. We have shoes that kids has to wear. For me, I was able to get friends who are coaches in the U.S. to send down lots of rackets and balls.
Some of the kids picked out their favorite stars in the sports and what motivates them to play.
Serena Williams, because she's good. I want to win a golden prize. Djokovic, because I like how he plays. I want to play in the Grand Slam.
Nashika Adu is on her way to the top of coaching in world tennis. it will not come as a surprise to see her cheering on her player at a Grand Slam, like American Coco Gauff did at 15. One of these kids could be walking in those shoes soon. And for the young coach, she's smashing her way through life with a racket in her hand. For the sunny side of sports, this is Yao Fosu-Labi in Accra.
Hi, I'm Francis Tiafo. You're listening to Sunny Side of Sports on Voice of America.
Host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
A message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Major League Baseball is reclassifying the Negro Leagues as a major league. What does it mean? The AP's Ed Donahue answers that question for us.
It means stats and records of 3,400 black players will count in the major leagues. The Negro League started to dissolve a year after Jackie Robinson became MLB's first black player with the Brooklyn Dodgers in 1947. The late Buck O'Neill played for the Kansas City Monarchs. He told the AP in 2005 about Negro League exhibition games with Major League white players and the extra motivation.
We stretched that single and that double, man, that double into a triple. We stole home.
Now O'Neill and other players are considered major leaguers.
We died in Europe fighting prejudice, World War II. And we come back home and we segregated. It wasn't fair.
The Negro Leagues were founded 100 years ago. I'm Ed Donahue.
Thanks, Ed. We heard from Buck O'Neill in Ed's report. Here are a few fun facts about Buck, who died in 2006 at the age of 94. About 2 months after his death, Buck O'Neill was posthumously awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom here in Washington by President George W. Bush. President Bush saluted Buck O'Neill for his excellence and determination, both on and off the baseball field. And Buck O'Neill joined other baseball greats such as Roberto Clemente, Joe DiMaggio, Willie Mays, and Jackie Robinson in receiving the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the highest civilian honor here in the United States. 8 years ago, the family of Buck O'Neill donated his Presidential Medal of Freedom to the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, which is located in Kansas City, Missouri. Kansas City is where Buck O'Neill spent most of his Negro Leagues playing career with the Kansas City Monarchs team. Buck also played a major role in helping establish the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. And for our VOA listeners who might be interested in visiting the museum in Kansas City, you might also want to visit the American Jazz Museum, which is located in the same building. the December 17th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.